Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast, episode 286. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Happy November, all you hungover zombies.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
Phil, you're remote at Ties for the...
Yeah, why is it I'm always the one that's running around here early in the morning, and you guys are sitting at home in your underwear sipping coffee? What's the deal?
I don't know about that. I don't know
about
that.
We like it that way, Phil.
That's right. Hey,
keep it up.
Tim actually submitted some music this week.
Was that Tim?
And you didn't like it.
Huh? Well, I didn't understand it, so I was trying to figure out what the context was, because it's this. It's Ship's Bells, so it's like...
Sure, why not?
I don't really know what...
If you played it for the whole way, you'd note that it's eight bells.
Okay.
Eight bells.
We're supposed to start at 8 o'clock, which is unusual.
Well, yes. Okay, now wait a minute. That's not eight bells.
It was. The whole clip I sent
but
him
was eight bells. But I'm saying eight bells is not 8 o'clock.
It isn't?
No, it is not.
It is sometimes.
It's basically a 4-hour shift because it goes off, a bell goes off every half hour. I believe it's a 4-hour shift. So a 4-hour watch. So it goes off every half hour. So eight bells is the end of your watch.
Darn.
Oh, interesting.
Oh. Right. I believe that's it. So.
Well, you could use it at the end of the show. How's that?
I think that's it. I may be wrong on those numbers, but it's not actually eight bells. It's not actually 8 o'clock. So. Just thought I'd let you know.
Interesting.
Wow. Nautical Phil.
It's Nautical Phil. Well, because we grew up in my house, my mom and dad bought one of those, you know, those ships. They had a ship's clock and a ship's barometer sort of a thing that were, wow, they're turning all the computers here, so you can hear that. So, but they were, you know, those brass things that hung on the wall. So we always had to listen to the, you know, the bells, and that was... Okay, so there you go. A little more information than you really needed to know.
No, that's good. That's real good.
Feel free to cut that part out if you want, Steve.
Nah, we'll leave it in. People will be rolling their eyes and going and getting another cup of coffee.
Like,
but
it's like what you know, Phil has absolutely no usable knowledge. So there you go.
That's right. Well, let's jump into some Minnesota stories. And I had read this about this company 75F in Mankato that is essentially an Internet of Things for commercial applications for sensors, and they've got a software as a service play and all of that. And had you guys heard about them before?
They won
the Minnesota Cup.
No, I know, but I mean, had you heard about them before?
Not much, because they're in Mankato, and they didn't have a real high profile in the Twin Cities, I don't think, until Minnesota Cup.
Got it. Well, this,
and
this,
then they got us. They got another. They won something else besides the Clean Tech Open.
The Global Clean Tech Forum.
Yeah,
they're going to be at in November, but
they got a third win at something. What was that? Oh, they won the $100,000 from Steve Case.
Right.
So that's three things. They're like everywhere all of a sudden. You know.
Yeah.
So
very
yeah.
impressive.
They've got to play on smaller office building temperature control.
Yep, for small
which
business.
Is apparently a wide open market, that part of the market, and they're ready to pounce on it.
Do you have any up more and more pieces of the action to more and more people?
Yep.
Well, and the thing is, we're going to find, I think, that most of these commercial Internet of Things companies are going to carve out there's probably 75 spaces that are really hot right now in the industrial internet. And there's a lot of opportunity out there.
There sure is. Especially if you believe companies like Cisco, who are pushing it huge.
Or McKinsey and Company, the consulting group, or PricewaterhouseCoopers,
yep.
you know, PwC
they're all,
and Deloitte.
They're all hammering. Yep.
They're all over it like a bad suit.
Yep.
So
Big money. They smell big money.
Yeah.
I think it's the next pets.com, personally.
Do you?
Yeah. It's just one of those things.
Well, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see companies all of a sudden announce that they went from zero to 100 million in, you know, a year and a half. Because they're going to have something that absolutely hits a sweet spot of what people need. It's, I mean, there are little things. You know, we talked about this last time, but little things like being able to reboot a modem automatically from somewhere else, or being able to get in and do things remotely with an internet connection that can save having to hop in the car and drive over to a location. I mean, how many applications are there like that? Or even, This is really fascinating. There's a realtor who shall remain nameless because I don't want to have somebody else steal her thunder, but she was talking about all of the houses that she works with a staging company. And when people leave, especially relocated executives, when people leave, they have the house staged, so it's not sitting empty. And so they have these rental companies that come in and they bring in furniture and books and all kinds of stuff, and they stage the house. Well, the people in the neighborhood and others know that nobody's there, and also that the house is listed. And what they want is a remote monitoring company. So rather than install a big alarm and system and all of that, is have motion sensors and have cameras in the house, so it can be monitored remotely. And if the motion sensor is triggered in the house, then somebody can look and watch. And they can also record people moving about inside the house. And then she was saying, well, you know, that could be expanded to regular houses, because, you know, people have stuff stolen all of a sudden.
Yeah, second homes and vacations.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
that's basically how SmartThing started, because he wanted to monitor his pipes.
Right.
After his pipes burst and he wasn't there, you know, for 6 months or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, remote monitoring is a big, big application for sure.
And who knows this company, Buzz 360?
I do.
We talked about them last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember they started last year.
I had a consulting gig with them last year, and they snagged some investment out of North Dakota. And the interesting thing was the lead, the largest single investor, and it's not a huge round. It's $385K, which is a combination of equity and debt. But the lead equity investor was a student-run fund at UND.
Oh, wow.
Called the Dakota Venture Group, which has been going on for quite a while. And in fact, was the first student-run investment fund in the country. And I found that interesting because I know Carlson's had one, and I guess not as long as they have. But one thing I learned was one of the guys at Arthur Ventures in Fargo is an alum of that program, Andy Christensen. And I knew he was a UND grad, but I didn't realize he had been part of that program. But it's pretty sophisticated. And I guess he did a long due diligence for Buzz 360 and finally cut the check. And the fun thing was a bunch of them came down from all the way from Grand Forks to present the check.
Oh,
so
cool.
That was pretty, pretty fun. And then along with that, Buzz 360 snagged a couple of notable angels in the Fargo area, well-known angels, Brian Dahl and Howard Dahl. Howard being the father of John Dahl, whom we know as a successful Twin Cities-based entrepreneur who moved to the Bay Area with Zencoder, got acquired by Bright Cove. So Howard and Brian are brothers, very, very successful businessmen in Fargo. And a lot of people don't know, but they've done a fair amount of angel investing in not just companies based up there, but companies based in the Twin Cities. And they agreed to be part of this announcement for Buzz 360. So good news for them. And the Buzz 360 founders are a husband and wife team that had previously sold a software startup to SAP in 2006.
Oh, really? What was the name of that?
They've been at it before. It was called Praxis Software Solutions. And it was an e-commerce and CRM kind of a play, I believe, for small business. So it was purchased as part of SAP's small business platform. And then they were with SAP for, I don't know, a couple years. And then they decided they wanted to do another one and sunk a lot of their own money into what became Buzz 360 last year. So good for them and good for North Dakota. I think there's going to be more and more of that North Dakota money coming down 94, which is can only be a good thing.
Yeah,
for our
kidding.
Startups. Yep. So yeah.
Cool.
Good deal for them.
Well, I want you guys to know that if I ever die, which is highly unlikely.
You'll never die.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. Well, actually, I'm hoping I'll download my consciousness into a bot and come back and terrorize the hell out of you guys. But there's a Eden Prairie company that's using 3D printing to customize creation urns. Cremation. And I don't know.
Where do you find these things?
I didn't.
Where does Julio find these stories?
This is Julio's article, but it's Tim, you're the guy that found it, right?
Yeah, this is the first of what I call two off-center stories that I thought we would discuss, because as you'll see in the next one, it's a little off-center.
Yeah.
But this is probably the most strange and out there of all of them. But I mean, it's a legitimate idea.
Well, the company
you're going to have
the company's name is Foreverence, and they offer custom 3D printed urns shaped like objects that were important to the deceased. Oh, like a beating heart, you know, something like that.
I mean, the photo in the story, the Devo hat. Are you kidding?
Yeah, there you go.
How funny. Night. Oh,
well, but you know,
I would not want to be put into a Devo hat, but maybe a cask of wine would be good.
That would be nice. Or a wine bottle. We could just put you in a bottle. Why would I have
that? There you go. Then you wouldn't.
Well, I will tell you that when my dad died, about a year and a half ago, we were born and raised Catholic, and we were just assuming, cause he was such a traditionalist when it came to Catholicism, that he'd want to be buried. In a casket. And it turned out that when we were about a year before he passed, we went through the whole living will thing and so on. And we broached the subject, and he said, "Oh no, I want to be cremated. I don't want to have an open casket and all that stuff. I don't like that." And so really, and so we chose a traditional urn that we thought he might like and all of that. But I thought, how cool would it have been to have a 3D printed car? Because he was just like all over. He loved cars. And one in particular that he had, 1941 Ford. It would have been fun to 3D print a 1941 Ford as an urn.
There you go.
You could still do it, Steve.
Well, yeah. Right? No.
He didn't have a 41 Ford Woody, did he? Those are really nice.
No, unfortunately. Unfortunately. No.
Those babies are nice.
So the next story you thought was odd. Tim, you don't have pets, do you? Optum Snap Vet Venture brings online diagnosis to pets.
I do, actually. We have a turtle, and I'm upset that I can't take a picture of the turtle when he's sick. Okay. And send it to this place because it's only good for dogs and cats.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. 90% of all pets.
Well, we actually don't have a turtle, but I thought this was a pretty interesting story though.
Sure. Why not? It's like, it's hypnosis for dogs and cats. So there you go.
Yeah. Telemedicine for the veterinary crowd.
out of all the telemedicine things they could be doing though, is why would they pick veterinary,
it's a hot topic. People will do anything for their pets. You know that
they will. They will.
Okay, yeah. so how
this
big?
Got it all going on.
Dude. How big do you guys think the pet industry is?
Big. Oh, it's huge.
It's big,
massive,
it's big.
Billions.
For 2014,
yeah,
it's estimated that $58.51 billion will be spent on our pets in the U.S.
There is that underserved, weird cat lady market where they don't get out much.
Yeah.
This would be perfect for them.
The weird cat lady market.
You guys, You know what, though? In all seriousness, it's huge. You know, the pet becomes part of your family and blah, blah, blah. And
how much money would you spend? Okay. If you have a dog, right, Steve?
Yeah.
Bitsy, I believe it is.
Bitsy.
Okay. And I have a dog, and I don't know, Graham, you don't have a dog, do you?
I don't even have a goldfish.
You don't have a goldfish. But okay. So, nothing. And Tim, you have a turtle.
No turtle. I just made that up.
You just made that up. Okay. Well, that's
good. You did? Okay. Oh, great.
We thought you were really, we thought you were very much into the turtle scene, you know, like,
Is there
like a turtle agility section?
Is this going to lead to like trouser mouse stuff or something?
No. I'm just wondering how much would you spend to save the life of that pet?
Well, it depends on how much you spend on them. I was looking in the paper for dogs the other day, and you can spend quite a bit of money on those guys.
Right.
I mean, just to buy them. I mean, there's some that were $1,000.
Yeah, but suppose you got a rescue dog.
Right. Okay.
It would depend on the dog's age, and would depend on what was wrong with the dog. So we had some friends that had a dog that was 10 months old, and was really still a puppy. Ended up with a cancerous tumor, and they decided to do the surgery, and it was $1,800, and the dog's fine. And now it's, I don't know, a year or so later. So the dog's, almost 2 years old. And, you know, so I would do that probably depending on, you know, what the prognosis was. But if the dog's, you know, 10 years old and it's going to live two more years, and it's really, you know, the surgery may or may not even take, and yada, yada, it all depends on risk factors. So I guess I can't really answer that. But we would want to, save her at all costs. I have to tell you that I was the guy, I was the holdout in the family when we had to put our other dog down because he had cancer, and we got this rescue. And the first morning after we got her was a Saturday morning, and she had a cone on because she'd been spayed, and she hops up in my lap. And so I put on a Netflix movie and just held her and petted her and stuff. And then my wife calls and goes, I'm going out with my sisters to Mall of America. Okay. Kids are still sleeping. So I watch another movie, and then I watch a third movie. So 6 hours she was in my lap. So guess whose dog she is? She follows me freaking everywhere. She wants to be in my lap all the time. It's just hilarious. So I have to tell you that I've come to absolutely adore this animal.
We're in that midst of you know, our dog is getting to the point where, you know, she's old enough that she has to go in for some surgery next week. And it's, you know, you start thinking to yourself, okay, at what point do you have to say to yourself, well, wait a minute, this is, you know, how much of your kid's tuition can you spend to, you know, keep the dog alive?
Well, what are you keeping the dog alive for the dog, or are you keeping the dog alive for you?
Oh, exactly.
Because there are some people that live not too far from us that this dog was, it was a golden lab, and it was almost 15 years old, which is pretty old for a big dog. And dog was blind, and it had like 4 of its teeth left. Ugh. And they had to feed it soft food. And I'm thinking, this is just not fair. The dog's like bumping into trees and shit when they're walking. I mean, it's just not fair, you know? The dog is, and the dog's clearly in pain when it's walking, and but they just love the thing, and I just don't think that's fair to the dog. So
you know what?
I think this system is good for livestock and would make a lot more sense for that.
Hmm.
You know, for horses and cows and such.
There you go.
Yeah.
Where vets have to travel a long way, and you know, I think it could be really good for that. And at the end of the story, it does say that they're looking at larger animals like horses.
Yeah.
Well, I think that would make a lot of sense, especially the fact that you're not going to put the horse in the back of the car and come down and see somebody. So yeah, it's, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. No, usually
you got a really big car.
Okay.
Usually.
All right. We have to segue because I'm going to start to cry.
We do.
So anyway, I'm kidding. But we need to talk about
Verizon's cookies.
Yeah. Let's get mad. So it's not just Verizon though. It's also AT&T. They're putting these perma cookies that are tied to your UDID or unique identifier on your smartphone or on your tablet, if you have a mobile connection. They're putting these perma cookies in, so everything that you use has the perma cookie in. And there was somebody that was also looking at the anonymized web browser Tor and wondering if that was, and they, I haven't seen anything definitive yet, but God, if you can, you know, if you're exposed like that, that's bad. Now you can opt out. So there's that option, but you gotta, it takes a little bit of poking around to be able to opt out. But have you guys looked at this and see if you're,
I'm not vulnerable? A Verizon or AT&T customer, so I don't care.
Oh, okay.
But I'm AT&T. I do it.
Phil, what are you? Are you AT&T?
No, I'm Sprint.
So yeah. What should I be doing as an AT&T
panicking
customer?
Yeah.
Panicking, or what do I do?
No, Steve? I'll put links in the show notes where you can go and you can opt out.
It says, though, that you can opt out, but it doesn't really, it says it's pointless. Right, well, they'll still insert this tracker into your web traffic.
Well, for now they are, but you can still opt out of the ad stuff. So, you can't totally block this, and so it's this is one of those things where it's going to require an act of Congress to be able to change this policy. Because you know what, if you want to be anonymous with your device and you're using the web browser, you can't be anonymous because this is in there. It's not stripped out. So I think that's bad, especially if you're in a country where you're using a smartphone and you're under an oppressive government. And if they can do something just like this with their mobile providers, now the government's got access to not only who you are, but they can tie it directly to the device and just contact the company and say, who is this? And now they've got you. And then that makes me wonder how many other apps are also doing this. So.
Well, I bet Currency is one of those apps.
Yeah.
Nice segue.
Yeah. Tim, Tim, you know, you're so into this in terms of marketing and stuff. What are your thoughts around Currency, which is the competitor to Apple Pay?
It sounds like a very convoluted system. Instead of using NFC like Apple Pay does, so it's a contactless kind of a transaction where you validate with your fingerprint and then it's you're in close proximity to a receiver. This actually presents a QR code that the user then has to scan with their phone using the Currency app. So it's not as secure. There are things that can be done to intercept that data while they're doing the transaction. But this system, and the reason that Rite Aid and CVS turned off their NFC so that it basically blocks Apple Pay, is that they're part of this MCX consortium that will be marketing Currency later, I guess in early next year, although they're testing it now. That's why we got the story that they were hacked in their tests this week.
Yeah.
The main reason that they want to do this instead of a system like Apple Pay is they don't want to pay the credit card companies their cut.
$48 billion last year.
Right, and they want to track you, so they want to know that Steve bought that Mentos, so they can send you more coupons for Mentos.
Right, and he bought Diet Coke too. So,
Ooh, yeah.
That's so he could make a Mentos bomb.
Making a fountain.
Yeah,
you know this Currency, this thing is doomed before it even gets going. You know what the funniest thing I read about the future of this thing? Yeah, it's like. The credit or the retail companies did so great with your credit card data. Now they want your bank account information.
Right.
It's like, good luck, Charlie Brown. You know, that thing is a joke.
It's not a joke. Technically, it's not very secure. I mean, it is, but it's not as secure as Apple Pay is.
Well, because Apple Pay basically never exposes your credit card number. It creates a token number.
Right.
And so it's never, that's no matter what, even if somebody, you know, if this would have been in place with the Target breach, there would have been nothing for these black hat hackers to sell on the open market, because they'd all be fake number or one time use numbers.
Yeah, well, it does them no good.
Well, let's not delude ourselves to think that Apple is going to be the only one that's going to offer automated payment systems via.
No, there's too much at stake.
Google Wallet.
Well, Google Wallet's been out for years.
But
nobody uses it. So,
It's the same system as what Apple's using.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, and when they turned it off, when they, you know, people that have been using Google Wallet at say a Rite Aid or a CVS for the last 3 years, they were cut off too.
Yeah.
You know?
Not at Walgreens, but Tim, at CVS and Rite Aid, right?
Yeah. Right, correct.
So,
right.
Tim, what do you think the barriers are to Google Wallet adoption? Is it that they didn't mandate that all hardware manufacturers include NFC in all devices? Or what do you see as the big barriers to adoption or the lack thereof?
I think it's just awareness, because every Samsung phone since the Galaxy S3 has had the whole system built in. Mm-hmm. And one of the complications is that they haven't demanded that the carriers provide secure SIMs. So if you want to use it, you have to go to your carrier and request a secure SIM. Where Apple already has that. Apple ships nothing but that SIM. That's where the secure element is.
Got it.
So there's more. It's more complicated, but technically, all the Galaxy phones have it. All the Nexus phones over the last since the Nexus 4 have had it. So it's out there. And I think it's an awareness thing. And Apple does a much better job of marketing this kind of stuff than Google does.
Yeah.
Yep. And there are going to be how many millions of iPhone 6s out there, you know, by the time Current C comes out?
Well, there's over 10 million right now.
Yeah, well, there'll be 20 or 30 million by the time Current C is out there, at least that many.
Yep.
So.
Huh.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Good luck.
No, I agree with Graham. I don't think that currency is going anywhere, but I can see why all these retailers are have signed up for it.
Yeah. Well,
they want their money, you know.
Yeah.
But you got to be friendly to the customers. What do the customers want? You know, they don't really give a crap if you're saving a little bit on your credit card fees. You know what I mean? And they really don't much give a crap about QR codes either. But that's another subject, you know.
I mean, well, what I thought was interesting was an article that I read about currency that I'll try to find here, but it talked about the infrastructure, the anti-fraud stuff and the customer service that is available through all the credit card companies that are backed up by the Visa and the MasterCard, American Express, and all of that to squash fraud, and none of that is in place with currency. So even though they could get it to work, you know, at the phone level and do the transactions and so forth, they really don't, they have no infrastructure built in or any experience to be able to help the consumer if something happens. So,
well, I feel sorry for our local Best Buy company who chose to go that route, you know. And it'll be interesting to see which retailers jump ship between now and when that thing comes out.
Interestingly, Target is sort of in the middle. So
yes,
they've signed up for this, and they don't accept Apple Pay at the checkout in the stores.
Online.
But they do accept Apple Pay online. Yeah, so that's kind of interesting.
Yes, that is. They're hedging their bets, which is, you know, at least smarter than what Best Buy appears to be doing.
Yeah. Well, so there was a huge development, and I'm glad, I think you put this in, Tim, or did I, about the FCC
I think you did.
Yeah, reportedly close to reclassifying ISPs as common carriers.
Yeah, there you go. The free and open internet is dead if that happens.
Well, it's, I don't know why you say that, because actually
the last thing we want is the U.S. government, you know, regulating what we can do on the internet. Right now, we have, you know, there's no regulation.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, in the FCC, they will regulate it. They will regulate it just like they regulate broadcast television, and they will tell you what you can and can't do on the internet.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if Tom Wheeler and company doesn't like independent podcasts, they will put up licensing. They will do all sorts of stuff to prevent free and open flow of information as we've seen it.
Yeah. Well, there's huge issues with this one, too. I mean, their intent, basically, you know, the FCC right now basically has no control over ISPs at all. So they can't really do anything. So as a consequence, there's no alternative to providers that did get government assistance to do rights of way to lay cable, for example, and to be able to have open pipes and then to also counter the fights against municipal fiber rollouts, which the cable companies do, you know, en masse. I mean, they just go after any municipal rollout. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, just leaving it alone is a better option. Yep.
Can the FCC do this without Congress approving it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't either. Well, look for what might happen if there's a change in control in the Senate. You know, we can probably kiss that goodbye.
Yeah.
Just from that alone. But anyway.
Well, the one thing that is interesting, though, is how the FCC is treating online video more like cable. And there was a discussion about how cool it would be to allow Aereo, that TV antenna company, and also, you know, Apple TV, Roku, Chromecast, all of that, to be able to offer live TV over their devices, and how the networks would win, because now there's a baseline licensing that would have to occur. And so now, instead of just having, you know, NBC showing up NBC's a bad example, CBS showing up on your cable connection or a satellite, now you could get it, you know, in a multitude of different ways, but all of those different ways have to pay CBS. So CBS is going to make more money overall. So I think that's kind of interesting. So a lot of the content creators and deliverers will actually make more money on that.
That's
pretty positive. Hey, Phil, you have to drop off soon. And can you just quickly tell us where you are and what's going on?
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to. And I apologize for that. You know, as the girls get here and start logging on to the Wi-Fi, it gets sketchier and sketchier. So I don't want to necessarily drop out in the middle of the podcast. But I did want to say that, yes, today is App Day for the folks at Technovation MN. We're at Ties in St. Paul. Basically, it's really an opportunity to train the mentors for the program on the app inventor platform that we use to mentor the girls on building apps. But it's also a chance for the girls to get a little head start on that, because the app challenge with the team participation starts in January. So that's why I'm here, and that's why we're doing the podcast here. So, again, want to encourage any of our listeners that are interested in mentoring young women to help them develop applications and start writing code. Boy, we'd love to have you be part of it. You can check it out at technovation.technovationmn. We'll just kind of go from there. So yeah, so go to technovationmn.org if you want to find out more. So
yeah, hey,
real quickly before you go, what is the platform they're using?
The platform, it's called App Inventor. It's an Android-based piece. It's was developed at MIT. So
oh, cool.
We heard
Sean. Yeah, it's an Android developed platform. So.
Yep.
Yeah, we heard Sean speaking about it at the Midwest Mobile Summit the other day, and I'll tell you, it does sound like just an awesome opportunity for companies to sponsor. You know, they should be lining up, you know, to sponsor that thing. Yep. The more people that know about it, the more that will happen, I'm sure.
Yeah. Very nice.
So
cool.
That's, you know, we got a, it's to a, just a short afternoon, or morning session today. But again, the big, app challenge starts in January. It's a 12-week program, and we always encourage people, if you want to be a mentor, if you want to mentor yourself, be a mentor alone, then that's a 12-week commitment, about 3 hours a week, 3 or 4 hours a week, usually in the afternoon when the girls get out of school. So, but you can also put together a team of mentors, so you can share that responsibility over the course of the 12 weeks, and it all culminates in the Appapalooza that they do in April. And then participants go on to a national competition with Technovation. So we'd love to have you get involved. So
great.
There's my pitch. So how about we'll put that under my one cool, we'll also classify that as my one cool thing.
Sounds
absolutely
great.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks for right, jumping on today, pal.
You bet, you guys. Take care of yourself.
Too.
Yeah, have a good day.
Have a great day.
See ya.
Bye.
Yep.
Yeah, he was starting to drop off. The Wi-Fi was starting to get jammed. So,
yeah.
Amazon really it releases this streaming stick, and it's $39.
Competitor to Google Chromecast? Is that what we're looking at here?
It's a different product, right, Tim?
Yeah, it's basically like their Fire TV shrunk down to a stick size. So it has an interface. It has a remote. You can use it with the game controller to play games. It's not quite as fast as the Fire TV, but it's fast enough apparently to play games. So it seems like a very interesting device. It's sort of halfway between a Roku and a Chromecast.
So I got a question for you, Tim. We find the use of Amazon. What do they call it? Instant video on Roku to be a really unsatisfactory experience. Is this going to be a better experience from a UI standpoint, a search standpoint, or don't you know yet?
No, it is. It's better in every way. You have with the $39 version, you have voice search built into the remote.
Oh gosh!
So if you're in with the Amazon ecosystem, you can just use your voice and it'll find stuff for you.
Oh, I'm going out to buy one right away then, because trying to use Amazon Instant Video on the Roku, you know, just sucks.
Yeah, what's the problem with it? Because we use it.
I don't know. The search is just, it doesn't, you know, we never use it. Every time we try it, we give up on it, it seems like. We can't find anything on it, you know. I mean, if this is any better, it's worth, for $39, it's worth a try.
Well, you know, what we do is my wife... she got the Prime account, so we only have one Prime account.
Well, I got that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, she'll sit down with her laptop and find what she wants to watch, and then she pushes it to the Apple TV.
Ah.
And so it's up on the TV. So she's, because I've even talked to her about, why don't we also get an Amazon Fire TV or get a Chromecast and just to see what's different and play with it and all of that, even though most of it's the same. And she says, well, why would we do that when I can just do this?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you can overdo it with the gadgets. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But for $35, I'm willing to give it a try. The other thing with Amazon Instant Video, with a Prime account, there's hardly anything worthwhile available in my experience.
Yeah.
What's your experience, Tim?
There's a lot of old HBO stuff. So if you haven't subscribed to HBO and you want to watch those older shows, they're all there.
Yeah, which means absolutely nothing to me, because I see nothing on HBO I want to watch ever since The Sopranos ended.
Did you ever watch True Detective?
No.
Oh, man. I love that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It was only one season. I mean, it's going to come back with two different guys. It was Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey.
That sounds good. Would that be available via Amazon Prime on Amazon Instant Video?
I think it's probably too new, don't you, Tim?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It just came out. So you can buy it for sure. I think it's $25 or $30 for the season. But
You know what I've gotten into watching lately, and I'm about, I don't know, 6-7 years behind, I guess, the Showtime series, The Tudors. Oh, my
really?
God. Oh, that thing is unbelievable, about King Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Huh.
Wow. Yep. And the stars in that thing, Peter O'Toole, and, well, he's the biggest star. He's the Pope.
Yeah.
That guy was amazing. I mean, talk about an actor. But yeah, I'm into about, I think I'm into at least the second season. I don't know how many seasons it goes, but I was reading the background on it. It's like, it goes back to like 2007 or something. It's like, what? I don't remember hearing about this.
But, yeah, it was on Showtime, yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely, but we don't subscribe to Showtime on cable, so that's why I didn't know about it, I guess.
Well, just about all my suggestions, because I watch House of Cards on Netflix, and we watch almost every decent British show that's out. Just about all my suggestions are British TV.
Yeah, well, I love that, though. That's, you're right about that. I'm with you right there.
Well, you know what's really fun is, I probably shouldn't say this too publicly, but connecting to a London server with private internet access and then accessing BBC and ITV, and the streams are phenomenally great.
Yep.
And being able to watch some of these shows are just, it's fabulous.
Getting them ahead of the US. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I'll have to start paying British taxes.
Ooh, those are bad. Watch out.
Yeah. Speaking of Britain and Ireland, thinking of Ireland and thinking of Apple's money parked in Ireland, how's that for a segue?
Hey, there you go. Not bad.
Tim Cook came out publicly, even though everybody already knew that he was gay. He came out publicly, and it's been really interesting to see some of the negative buzz, but also the overwhelmingly positive buzz. And do you think that he should have just not said anything or just left it alone? Or do you think this is, you know, important enough as a role model for those kids who are killing themselves, for example? And
if it's important to him, and it is, yes, he did it, and he did it in a classy way.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Wall Street basically shrugged its shoulders. They don't care. I mean, with a company with a performance like he has, it's like, and he's not the only gay CEO out there of a publicly traded company, but more and more of them probably will be coming out now. But yeah, everybody knew it. Anybody who's connected to Silicon Valley knew it. The vast public did not know it. You wonder how much Wall Street knew it. I'd be shocked if the insiders and the Wall Street traders and so forth didn't already know. But, you know, he came out and got a lot of, I think, positive press from all around.
Well, unfortunately, I have a fundamentalist Christian conservative family member who said they're no longer going to use Apple devices. And also, it's no wonder Apple is doing so well, because they undoubtedly made a pact with the devil.
Oh. Really?
I thought,
didn't really happen.
Oh my God. It did in not quite that overt way, but that was part of the one paragraph with 17 sentences in it that went on and on and on about it. But anyway,
I
can't say any more, or otherwise I'll identify this individual. So,
well, there are those anyway. That think that way, but it's his life. He can do what he wants in his private life. If he keeps running Apple the way he's been running it, who can fault this guy? I mean, the stock's at an all-time high, as I'm sure you noticed, went over 108.
Oh, I know. Well, believe me, I know.
That is? That's 756 pre-split.
So unbelievable. It's
going like crazy.
Well, we've expressed our gratitude to Steve Jobs over and over and over again for saving our retirement. Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't for Apple, the 401k would be good, but not great. Now it's great.
I'm totally with you. Same thing here. You know, I lost my ass on enough stocks back in .com day and so forth. And
well, see, my favorite thing is, and you're probably in the same boat, is I'm talking to my brother-in-law, and he goes, you know, with all these startups and stuff that you're playing a technology advisor role in, he said, do you get stock or anything? And I said, well, yeah, I get warrants. In fact, I've had warrants in 7 startups from 1990 until now. And he goes, well, how many have paid off? And I said, none. So I've traded, you know, time, effort, energy for warrants that, you know, they've all vanished. And he goes, well, you know, 1 out of 10 deals work, so you got 3 more tries.
So, well, that's right. You know, and I've been that lucky. I've had one out of 10 pay off nicely, and I've got another one that's going to be paying off in the not too distant future.
Very nice. So,
but if it wasn't for Apple, yeah, I mean, that was the smartest decision I ever made to buy some back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I love telling that story when I go into the Apple store too. I was chatting with the manager when I went into the Uptown store the other day, and I happened to mention that, and, you know, and I was sitting there admiring the rush into the place at 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. on a Sunday. And I was lucky enough to get in there at 20 to 11 for a Genius bar appointment. And I said, are there people lining up out there already? And he goes, oh, yeah. And the Genius says, oh, yeah, they're waiting to come in and buy up our iPhone supply. And he said, I don't see any of the resellers in the line, though. And he said, they're the ones that come and buy all they can buy and ship them over to China. And he said, I don't see any of them here. And I says, maybe you should check your stock on a 6 Plus for me.
Yeah.
And he did. And I bought one before the rush came in, because I figured if I don't buy now, I probably won't get one.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah. Because it's like 6 weeks out before you can order one
online. Yeah, well, I was lucky.
I
snagged one. I got more than I wanted. I got 128 gig. I was going to buy a 64, but I thought, what the heck? And he goes, yeah, with that camera, you're probably going to be storing a lot more photos, the bigger photos, you know. And okay, let's go for the 128. And then the manager came over to talk to me about my reservation. He had to put a quick reservation in, you know, before somebody snagged it, because there's how many salespeople standing around in there? You know, there must have been 15, 20 workers in the store before opening.
Wow.
So anyway, I love telling her, you know, as a stockholder, I just love seeing these people coming in. You know, I mean, unbelievable. And the Uptown store, you know, I couldn't get a Genius appointment at Southdale on Sunday. It was like they were all booked. I tried Saturday, and I've always been able to do one day ahead. I thought, well, the heck with it, I'll go to Uptown. It was wide open Sunday morning. And I thought, okay, I'm taking the first one. And I didn't know I'd be buying an iPhone when I got there. I thought I was going to look at them. I hadn't even looked at them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I opted for the big one. I don't think I'll be sorry. I'm having all kinds of fun.
Yeah, that's what everybody says, that they actually got the big one, and I didn't, but...
Well, then I ran into you at Best Buy
later with my wife,
day, trying to buy a case for the damn thing.
Yeah.
And they couldn't help me. But anyway.
Well, so I thought this was pretty fun. I put this article in from Variety that, you know, you've heard the buzz. In fact, Variety reported a couple weeks ago that Christian Bale was in talks to star as Steve Jobs in this new Jobs biopic, and now they're saying that Seth Rogen has been set to star as Steve Wozniak, opposite Christian Bale, and I thought about that for a minute, and I thought, you know, he's probably too outgoing and too gregarious to pull off a Steve Wozniak, but maybe not.
Well, give us some background on this Seth Rogen. I'm not real familiar with him.
Oh, he's been in all kinds of films. I mean, he's done, you know, The Guilt Trip with Barbara Streisand, and he did, what's that?
Neighbors.
Making of a Porn Movie with his girlfriend to raise money, and all kinds of different stuff. Yeah, he's been in tons of films.
Mm.
So, and I find him to be pretty funny almost always.
Well, he's a comedy actor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see him in a dramatic role.
Right.
He'll have to grow his beard out, though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Wozniak's a pretty fun guy, so maybe it'll work.
Could very well be.
So when will we be seeing this movie? Quite a ways out, I suppose.
Steve's security tip of the week.
Sorry, I accidentally hit that. But
wow,
so, that's all right.
So when will we see the movie? I don't know. They haven't really
probably
said.
Probably be in a couple of years.
Couple of years.
Yeah.
All right. So
maybe next year. Who knows?
So maybe I should segue into the security tip of the week. What do you think?
Let's do it.
I have several clients that have legacy Drupal sites. And they've some have kept them up and others haven't kept them up and so on. Well, so I get the Drupal alerts in my RSS feed, And they came out with a public service announcement about a highly critical major breach that was compromising Drupal 7 websites. And so on the 15th of October, they'd come out with this announcement at 11 p.m. UTC, which is, you know, what's that? That's 5 in the morning for us. You should proceed now under the assumption that every Drupal 7 website was compromised unless it was updated or patched before October 15th at 11 p.m.
Which is a lot of sites.
Well, the estimate by the BBC is there's based on the number of Drupal sites and so forth, that there's about 12 million Drupal sites that have been compromised. And they're saying, well, what might have happened? Well, attackers may have copied all data out of your site and could use it maliciously, and there may be no trace of the attack. And that attackers may have created access points for themselves, called backdoors, in the database, code, files directory, and other locations. Attackers could compromise other services on the server or escalate their access. And so basically they're saying, because removing a compromised website's backdoors is pretty tough, to essentially roll back to an older version and basically nuke your current installation and then go through your entire server. And oh my God, This is just, I mean, the buzz on the Drupal forums and the Drupal site itself, and then also on Hacker News and all these other places, people are just, they're going insanely crazy about, oh my God, what the hell do I do? And then we talked about this before on the podcast, but and about all the, you know, the federal government has basically leapt on Drupal a primary distribution. So anyway, so here's the point. The point is, there's no way that you can know if you're on a specific version of Drupal, but there's a little plugin that you can get for Chrome and Firefox and Safari called Built With. And if you get that plugin and you go to a website and you click Built With, it'll tell you what it's being used. You know, it's using Drupal, for example. And then there's also a plugin for Firefox, and I'll put links in the show notes for this, called Drupal Version, so you can actually see the version. But here's the punchline. The punchline is, I would not, for the next several weeks, I would not use any Drupal site that asks for credentials or is an e-commerce driven site. I just wouldn't use the sites at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
The company provides professional services support and hosting for Drupal is Acquia. They must be going nuts right now, huh?
Yes.
You've talked about them a lot.
Yeah, but the kicker is that they patch, and they patch all the time. So if you're hosted in Acquia Gardens, for example, I would bet, I have not investigated this, so I can't say definitively, but I would bet that these guys are on top of this. And if they release a patch, that the absolute nanosecond that patch is released, they're updating their installation, their infrastructure, because they're really good. They're really on top of this stuff. Because Dries Buytaert, the guy that started Drupal, is a board member, a leader in a leadership role there. So.
At Acquia.
At Acquia.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So. Pretty interesting. Well,
and whitehouse.gov runs on Drupal, as well as many hundreds, thousands of other government sites.
Right, right.
So they don't need more problems than they've already got, but they got their tech problems quadrupled now, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, for those of us like Tim and I who are dyed-in-the-wool WordPress users, you know, we can't sit here smugly smiling, well, it's those Drupal guys, because you know what? You can turn right around and slap us in the face, eh, Tim?
Could.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
I mean, who knows?
But I don't think so. I think WordPress is pretty secure, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the percentage of websites that it runs now? It's something amazing. It's
nearly 23% of the top 1 million websites in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, almost.
Which is a lot more than Drupal. Would that be a lot more than Drupal,
yeah,
I assume?
Drupal, I do not believe, I've not seen the latest stats, but I do not believe that they've broken the double digit percentage mark. Okay. So they're still under 10% of sites of the top million.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's a complicated platform. It's really a developer platform.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's really not a major.
It's real geeky.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So cool thing of the week. We already heard from Phil that it's app day with Technovation MN. Timster, what's your cool thing?
The Microsoft Band, which is their fitness band, which came out this week. In fact, it dropped just a couple of days ago. Sort of everyone knew that, I had heard rumors that they were working on something like this, but the whole thing dropped fully formed, and you could go down to the Mall of America and buy one today for $199.
Oh, really?
Yep. Huh. It's their fitness band, but it has a screen that has more information. So it looks more like what Samsung has done with their, what do they call it? They have one that's I think it's a Galaxy Fit or something like that.
Yeah.
That is more like a bracelet with a wide screen on it. And it tracks all of your stuff just like any other, like a Fitbit or the upcoming Apple Watch does. It has a heartbeat monitor as well. But it also shows notifications. And if you have a Windows phone, you can do voice commands with Cortana, which is their version of Siri. So it looks very interesting. It looks very clunky. And if you read some of the early first impressions, you'll see that they think it's kind of first generation hardware, but it has a lot of potential. And that's kind of what the consensus is at this point.
Yeah. Well, it sure looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
And what about app? It does say iPhone, Android, or Windows Phone it works with.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Which is, that's something interesting too, because only Fitbit and Jawbone and those kind of fitness bands are cross-platform. I think we're going to get into it, with the Apple Watch and with Android Wear, where they're platform specific. I like this idea of being cross-platform, because I think it has a much better chance of, gaining a much wider acceptance.
Yeah.
Well, when Doug Olson, he and I had lunch not too long ago, and we were talking about all kinds of different stuff, family stuff and everything. But I asked him point blank, as I said, so tell me what it's like when you are in a meeting and you've got an iPad or your MacBook Pro and he goes, Steve, look, this is a totally different Microsoft. And now this is even during the Ballmer time. He said, this is a totally different Microsoft. He said, with the Azure platform, for example, it's really all about the platform itself, and it's agnostic to all devices because it has to be. And it's the same thing with kind of the new Microsoft. Is directionally, it's all about software, and it's all about cloud-based delivery, and it's all about stuff like this Fit device, even though I didn't know anything about this, but that's what I find interesting about the new Microsoft under Nadella is it's really all about how do we embrace and extend. Because just as a quick aside, I had my cousin Mark was using his lady friend's laptop, and he was having all kinds of problems. I said, well, let's get together for coffee and we'll just look at it. And I looked at it and I ran some quick tests on it, and the thing was riddled with Trojans and malware. Oh my God. The quick scan showed six major Trojans that had been on there, one of which was on there since 2010. And so I did a quick clean and I told him, I said, so now don't use this laptop. And he goes, well, I just used it to buy something online. I'm like, oh man, watch your credit card statement, pal. He goes, well, it was actually my debit card. And I go, watch it closer. Call your bank.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Tell them what's going on. But so I came home, and on my iMac 27 inch, I loaded Windows 8 in boot camp and then upgraded that to 8.1. And, they've made all these changes with the new start menu and stuff. And I have to tell you that the user interface on Windows 8.1, I mean, I just sit back and I look at this thing and I go, could they have made this any less intuitive if they try? I mean, it's like, it's literally like they tried to make it less intuitive. It's just, it's the most, and then using Skype on it goes full screen and, you know, it's not a discrete app and it's just, you know, the whole thing is just what a cluster. I just think, God, these guys, you know, focus on apps. Cause I love OneNote, for example. I use OneNote. I love that as an app. And, yep. You know, Microsoft Office, well, whatever. But you know, it's kind of does everything for everybody, but so Graham, yeah,
OneNote seems to be really popular in the Microsoft world, I've gathered.
Yeah.
But you know, I was going to say all this talk about being open to other platforms. Did you read where Ballmer's telling everybody who follows his NBA team not to use Apple or other products and encourage them to only use Microsoft products?
Well, sure.
Thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
why doesn't the guy just leave it behind, you know?
Yeah, I know.
He's gone. But anyway, yeah, you're wondering what my thing of the week is?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm easily amused. Being a new iPhone 6 Plus user, my cool thing of the week is my iBlason Transformer iPhone 6 Plus slim holster and kickstand case. This thing is amazing. It's got so much going on. I couldn't believe it for $19.95.
Except for the name, which doesn't roll off your tongue. But other than
that. But I had never heard of the company, but they have several cases when you search on Amazon. I was amazed to find as many cases for the 6 Plus as I found. I ordered a couple, didn't like one. I'm returning it. But this one, because it's got the little kickstand that so you can stand it up to watch videos. And that works in either portrait or landscape, of course. And then it comes with a holster, and I thought, well, I'm not going to use that thing. But you know what? The more I use this thing and the more I hold it in my hand and worry about dropping it, the more I think there might be times when I want to wear this thing on a holster. And you can pull it out of the holster real quickly. The holster clip for your belt spins in any position you want it and holds clicks into different positions. And I thought, for $19.95, this thing has a lot of engineering in it, you know, so I'm keeping it.
Very cool.
But when I bought the case, when I bought the phone at the Uptown Apple store, the only case they had at the time was the Apple $49 leather case. And I thought, yeah, I'm sure that's fine, but I want to look at, you know, other options. And, you know, there aren't all that many yet. I'm sure there'll be tons more. But this one filled the bill while I wait on... remember that thing I had on a previous cool thing of the week? I had that case that allows you to shoot photos easier. It's a Kickstarter project.
Oh, sure.
That originally was for just the iPhone 6, and they're going to be delivering that in November. But then in December, they're delivering the same thing for the 6 Plus. So I'll be trying that case too because I've already bought it, already ordered it.
Very nice.
So Graham, did you get the red or the purple?
You mean the case or the...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even know it came in colors. No, I just got black. Yeah, it does come in multiple colors, I guess. Yeah.
Kind of boring. What's funny is they charge $30 for the red one. What's the deal with that?
I don't know. I don't know what
It's not even a Project Red either. It's just the red.
Well, the color's more expensive, so...
More expensive to make or something.
Yeah, because you got to stir the color a lot more. I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah, I know. All right, so my cool thing is, and I just sent each one of you an invitation that finally came, Google Inbox. And it's Google's attempt. I also put a link in the show notes for this Mashable video that actually has some of the execs talking about why. You know, why bother doing Inbox? But I'm running Gmail, which manages all 14 of my email addresses. And Inbox does the same. Once you log in, same thing. But I'm always sending myself stuff. And I always wonder where my purchase stuff is and so forth. And I'm not yet 100% sure that I'm willing to give up Gmail quite yet, but boy, am I close. Because you can pin stuff, which is awesome. So if there's something for sure I have to deal with, rather than go back and mark it as unread, so that it stays, you know, a top of mind for my Gmail box, now I can pin it, which is cool. You can also create your own bundles. So they automatically do these bundles for promos and purchases and travel. Remember when they did that in Gmail and you had tabs across the top? Well, as soon as I found out how to get rid of that, I did, so that everything was just right there, because I hated that, the way that they bundled that in Gmail. But this actually is pretty cool. And and so I send myself stuff all the time. And so now I can just have them in bundles. So I just need to figure out how to address an email to myself with the bundle name, so it automatically goes into the bundle. I haven't done that yet, but, anyway, it's pretty cool.
Well, thanks for the invite.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a try.
And I've only been using it, you know, since right before the show. And I really like this, this web interface. I mean, I tried it very quickly on the mobile, cause that's the way you have to accept your invitation. Right. But the web interface is similar to mobile, but I don't know. There's just having more space and everything. It just looks good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try it this week. I'm going to give up Gmail and I'm going to try this using this exclusively and see how it goes.
I'm scared to give up Gmail.
You're scared?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
You don't really have to leave it behind though. Couldn't you go back if you decide, I don't like this?
Yeah. Well, I've got two tabs open in Chrome. Actually I've got 20 tabs open in Chrome, but on the left-hand side, I've got Gmail, and then the next one is Inbox, the next one's Calendar, the next one's G+, you know, yada, yada. And so I'm running Inbox and Gmail side by side, and there'll be times when I just say, okay, for the morning, I'm just going to run Inbox and just see what it's like. And then if there's something that I don't like or it doesn't really connect correctly, then I can go back to Gmail and do it. But yeah, I'm going to have to decide at some point, cause I'm sure they're going to make one or the other go away. So any events we haven't not talked about? I think we're pretty good on.
Nothing new popped up on my screen, beyond what we had in last week's show, the Tech Awards. New one in. Oh, you did? Which one?
It's a Ties 2004 educational.
On December 6th. Yeah.
Yep.
Good, 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 good.
So that's the only new one I could find. I looked all the way into next year as well, and that was the only major thing that we hadn't talked about.
Yeah.
December 6th. Yeah, events start dropping off when you get into December, except for holiday parties, which I'm sure we'll be adding our share of those in coming weeks.
Right.
Miss those, but they're not really conferences. They're just networking events, but anyway.
Well, if you wanted to go to Ties, just as a general person, you know, the exhibit floor is actually pretty cool. I mean, there are a lot of really interesting technology vendors that have booth space there and are showing education-centric versions of their product or uses and so on. It's $330 if you want to go for both days, or $198 if you want to go to just one day. And that'll do the breakout sessions, exhibits, and the continental breakfast. I don't see any exhibit-only thing, but at any rate.
Yeah, they're doing it at the Hyatt downtown, it looks like.
Yeah, that's where it's been for years. Yep.
Yeah, same place as MobCon this year.
Yep.
A couple weeks after MobCon. Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah, it'd be fun to go and see companies like KidBlog and.
Yeah, exactly.
And lots of others. You're right. There are a lot of really, really cool startups, many of them far along in the education space in Minnesota.
Yep. Well, everyone, I want to thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Take care.
Yeah. Okay, guys, have a great fall day. Stay warm.